You can find LUL Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at LUL Podcast. You can also subscribe to LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Welcome to the first of a four-part series. They may not be consecutive, but it's a four-part series where we are going to explore the four different modalities: listening, reading, writing, and speaking, both in how they can be graded, what we look for, and also how to approach using that modality in class to promote growth and proficiency. Today's focus is going to be on the listening modality, which is usually one of the more difficult modalities for students to feel confident with. Think about what you currently do and what you could potentially be doing to promote proficiency in listening in your classroom as we get in to level up. I'm excited to be talking to you today. Today I'm joined, this is one of your hosts, Miles Nance, also known as Nancy or Mr. Nance, joined today by Davin Lemke and Roger Burt. Brandon Welker's on location today, so he shan't be joining us, but he should be back with us next week. Today was a day of all days. I don't know how you guys' classes were today. I think my students were out of it for some reason. I felt out of it. Is it the barometric pressure, do you think?
I believe in zombies because I've seen three class periods full of them now.
Man, that's one of my favorite sayings. Usually, how are you guys doing at the beginning of class? Man, we're full of a bunch of zombies today.
Mine was just my last period.
Yeah.
Last class of the day. They were a little lagging today.
Yeah.
My other classes were on top of stuff, though. They were great.
I felt pretty zombie-ish today, but we still got some stuff done and worked on some different skills within my classes, and sounds like you guys did as well. So as mentioned, today we're going to jump in on part of a four-part series. It's going to be kind of intermixed with some other episodes about advancement opportunities, other higher-level classes, things you can do there. But we're going to talk about the different modalities, and today we're talking about listening, which again is one of the more difficult modalities for students, not just to grasp, but to feel confident with. Because I think part of it is they understand more than they think they do. They just don't feel that confidence. And we're going to kind of explore maybe reasons behind that and try to discuss also what can we do in our classes to promote listening and to promote those skills and work on those skills where maybe they don't know everything, but at least they can feel confident in what they do know and what they can figure out. And as we've talked about on recent episodes about competency-based placement and proficiency grading and all that, we've mentioned how important it is for students to be taught not just memorizing words for the sake of memorizing words or grammatical structures, but the skills to use the language and the skills to interpret the language in this case, where listening is an interpretive modality. We need to teach those skills to the students where maybe your lessons and your unit is all about clothing, but where they could be dropped into the country and be able to, I ripped a hole in my pants. I need to go buy new pants, right? My first year teaching, I ripped a hole in my pants on the back of one of the desks, I think in the first month. So anyway, that's a real life use, and you may not ever address that in your class specifically, but they need the skills to do that. So we want to try to focus on some of those skills for listening. Now for students, it's easy to get lost. And we've mentioned once before on a podcast with interpretive modalities, students have to go through a process of decoding what they hear. And with listening versus reading, that decoding sometimes takes a little bit longer. And I've had this discussion with some of my students. Decoding an audio file or decoding the spoken language from a video, it's going to take longer than it is when you're reading the material, because you can't see the words. You can't necessarily tell what's a cognate, especially if it's not a true aural cognate, if it sounds different but it looks the same as an English word, for example. It's just going to take students longer. Also, with a reading, you can stop whenever you want, right? You're reading through and you don't know a word. You could stop if you wanted to. when you're listening to something, if you can't stop the audio, you can't stop a conversation in the middle of a conversation without asking a question anyway. You can't just hold your hand up and have them stop, right? At least it wouldn't be polite anyway, right? So we've got to work on these skills with listening to where you've got to pick and hunt and find these individual words where reading you can listen for context. And I remember from my own experience when I lived in France and when I was learning French at Weber State University, there were times when we watch movies or watch segments of news where after we watch it 5-10 minutes later, I'd remember, oh, that's what they said. That's the word that I heard. And I think students, they need that extra time to process what they hear. And we'll get in and talk about some of the expectations as far as ACTFL is concerned. For example, with a novice level, they're going to struggle if it's more than one sentence at a time. So they need that opportunity to stop at a sentence, replay in their mind what they heard, think about what they heard, what words individually. So it's just a completely different skill than reading. Where reading, you could keep going and going and going and use more context. Listening, you've got to be able to pick those one or two words and use those to figure out the question or figure out what's going on.
Will you define decoding in the world language context? That's a word we use a lot in education. I think from a lot of definitions I've heard, it can vary a little bit content to content, even though there is kind of a general definition. So perhaps for the listeners who aren't familiar with our world language version of decoding, would you define what that process is? Like, what is it exactly?
Do you want like a dictionary definition? Because I don't think I can give that to you. In my head, this is how decoding would go. So there's a sentence. Give me a sentence. My mother is sick at home. Okay, there's a sentence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So decoding would be taking those words from a different language, a second language, a world language, and in your brain, okay, this was it in French, for example. What are these individual words in English? And I think part of that is students try to do all of them, try to figure out what every single word means. So they'll go through, okay, the very first word was my. What does my mean? Okay, mine means my own. It's possessive. Okay, they may not go through all this knowingly. It might be kind of a behind-the-scenes thing. My, and then mother. Okay, my mom is. What is that? So they're going to go through each word one at a time, or they're going to try to, and we've got to kind of flip that where listen for the one or two words that you know. So you aren't focused on decoding and translating. Translating is a bad word. I would say interpreting.
Or comprehending. Yeah. They're breaking the sentence down so it's not a sentence to
exactly.
them. They're breaking it down to the level which they can understand it. And then depending on the task, they may make inferences or maybe even just guess at what the rest of it might be so they can string together as much meaning as possible.
Exactly. They're trying to put it into terms that they understand.
Right.
Which for the earlier levels, and even to the lower intermediate levels, you'll get some students that will need to translate it into English in their brain before they can understand. And after a while, for some phrases, like even now, my level ones, they may not actually think anymore when they hear je m'appelle, or my name is, or this is what I call myself. They might not even think about that specifically anymore, but I guarantee you the first month or so of class, they were probably taking that je, and was je again? Let's see what comes. Some of the summer things that he's pointing to himself when he says je. That one's I. Okay. He's saying his name now. So they're going to use all those contextual clues to put them into terms that they think that make sense to them. That's what I think decoding is. Is that a good response as to what decoding is?
Yep.
Okay. So the problem there, as I mentioned, with listening versus reading is you can't stop when you're listening to a conversation. So you've got to find you've got to work on those skills where they aren't trying to do everything and trying to pick one or two words to get the general to get a general understanding of what's happening.
And a lot of times you have to explicitly tell the students, especially with the listenings, you just have to tell them, don't try to even understand all of it. It's just not going to happen, especially the novice levels. I mean, if you have a listening, some kind of audio that's 30 seconds to a minute, you know, that's a paragraph or more of language.
Right.
And where they're focusing just on cognates and very, very basic formulaic sentence structure, they're just not going to get every single word. And so they have to understand just right away, you're not going to understand everything. I know you're not. That's not what we're addressing. We're addressing it, what should you be able to get?
Right.
And that's not 100% of this. And it is harder with listening. Main reason, like you said, is you can't stop. And the problem is a lot of students might think like, oh, wait, what was that word? Well, then they've missed the next sentence or something like that, which is emphasizes the importance of repetition, that we have to make sure the students have multiple opportunities, but mostly that the students understand the task before them. So they know how to decode. Like you said, like, we need to explain to our students, this is what you're going to do. You're going to decode this so it makes sense to you, so you understand it. Break the sentence down, look at the words, and then the next time through listening, whatever you got, you just add to that. And then you add to it as much as you can every time you listen. And then you'll probably be fine.
Yeah, I feel like with listening specifically, you have to start at the smallest possibility, and that's the individual word. I think with reading, which we'll get into a lot more detail on a different episode, but I feel like with reading, you can look more of the whole.
Or at least phrases and a few sentences
but
or
with,
something,
with
right?
With listening specifically, the students, like you said, they need to be okay, and they need to understand the fact that they're looking for one or two words, and then each additional time you listen to it, try to add more. So this is, I heard football. It's a sport. They might be talking about, do they like it? They might be talking about their favorite team. So the next time I listen to it, what else goes with football? And then they can anticipate some of that information. And you kind of started touching on this, Davin. What are some other skills? You mentioned that we're picking out that one word and trying to figure out the meaning of other words, and having to re-listen to things and to not pay attention to everything. Just figure out those one words and then add to that one word. What are some other skills do you feel like we need to focus on as teachers to break them from that problem of where they feel like they have to understand everything?
I don't know if this is a skill, but and I don't know how easy it is for students to do it. A lot of students don't have, or they struggle with the listenings because they're so tense up, because they are hard. They are challenging. So I notice a lot of my students, sometimes it's like, you know that word. I've said it numerous times. Now, granted, my accent's very different than the native speaker. And it might just be an off day for them or whatever. But sometimes once they realize that's what was said, like, oh, I knew that. You know, it's that calming. I don't know if you would call that a skill or just a prep, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes you just have to relax the student, like, you can do this. You don't need to do everything. Just breathe. And the other skill I would say is students need to learn what's important and what's not. If we give them a reading. I did a reading today with my level ones. It was probably a total of, it wasn't a very big one. It was maybe 9-10 sentences total. And I had 5 questions. And so some students were asking about certain words. And instead of saying what those words were, if it was an easy word that might help with context, I'd help them out. Some of the words I would just say, it's not important. Like, don't worry about it. Focus on this part. Not that I'm trying to prohibit their learning, that maybe they could learn more vocab, but sometimes you have to help students understand what's important, that focus on what's important. There are going to be things that you're reading and listening to that just don't matter in the moment. If you get them, that's great, you know, and you can build from them, that's awesome. But I think one skill they need to have is, I'm only focusing on the task at hand. Anything additional is just extra stuff that I can add to my vocab and my structures and stuff.
Yeah, and that's where, like, we need to make sure that we're helping them. I always make sure that my students look at the questions being asked first, like, very, very clearly. So then they can kind of at least approach the listening with some sort of anticipation. It's like, with this question, I know they're going to be saying something like this, or, you know, they can kind of have some vocab in mind of something that'll be like a trigger. So as soon as they hear that, like, okay, this is it. So they need to go through their questions very carefully before they even do the listening. So that, just like you were saying before, so that they're not getting hung up on unnecessary details. Very similar to the reading. Yeah. Anyway, we just need to make sure that we're, helping them understand exactly what they're listening for and what they're not listening for, so that they can separate the two.
Yeah, and I would say that's a skill, and I think it's a skill that we've honed in our native language, whatever that may be for the student. where I can guarantee you, and I know we do this as teachers, we go to seminars or whatever. We don't listen to every word. We don't, when we take notes, we don't note every word. And same for the students. They don't listen to everything we say, whether it's in English or our world language. That I would say that's definitely a skill we need to mention to the students, that this is what we're working on. You don't need to understand everything. You, like with the reading to get main points, or with listening is to get a main idea. You don't need to understand everything. Understanding a few words here or there is probably going to be enough. And then everything else, like you said, Devin, is great, but it shouldn't be a worry. And that's, making sure your students are comfortable. That was that first skill that wasn't a skill, that is a skill.
Yeah, I would call it a skill, because sometimes it takes some good practice to be relaxed.
It does, and I think that comes with the environment of our class. So some of the different that's a method, whether you see it that way or not, but I believe the environment of your class, how you run your class, that's a method of instruction that goes a long way to helping and making sure your students feel comfortable not knowing everything and not understanding some words and making mistakes. I think some other games that you might be able to play where they're trying to figure things out is have a listening, and then let's see what's the most bizarre thing you think this could be about. Like listen to a paragraph or a sentence, and okay, just as a class, what do you think is one? What is this about? What's the weirdest answer we can get? And then see, okay, this is what someone says. It sounds like they're talking about my grandma is eating slippers. Let's go with that. And then listen to it. Can we hear anything about a grandma or slippers or anything that sounds like it? So it's one of those skills where, or I think it's something that we can work on in our classrooms where they're not afraid to be wrong. They're afraid to just throw, so I think I heard grandma. I think I might have heard, what is it, abuela?
That's right.
I might have heard abuela, but really it turns out it's something totally different. But that skill of listening to those individual words, you're going to hear things that you think are a word, but turns out it's something different that sounds similar, or maybe it's for the longest time, and I'll admit this, when I was Weber State, it wasn't the longest time, it was like two semesters, there was a word, at least I thought it was a word, mise en relief. I thought it was one word, and I remember asking, how do you spell that? And when I wrote it as one word, they were laughing at me. It's actually three words. But I think there are things like that where they think they hear a word, or I understand why you heard that. It makes perfect sense. That's not what it was, but it makes perfect sense as to why you thought you heard abuela, right?
And it's okay for a student, when we think about one of the skills the students are working on, one skill is to run with something that you think it is.
Yeah.
And then if it's not that, that's fine. Change course. One of the websites, and I can't remember the website now, which university it was, they had a bunch of things about the IPA. And since the IPA can hold a listening portion as part of the interpretive task, they emphasized the need to work on the skill of playing the audio, have the students write down everything they understood, and then the teacher kind of facilitates some type of discussion. What did we hear? And, you know, teacher writes it on the board. Okay, somebody heard this about a grandma, whereas this person actually heard something about a grocery store. And so you kind of put up basic ideas up, and then you play it again. Okay, let's play it again. Which way are we going? And the students, you know, maybe it was about a grocery store and it has nothing to do with una abuela. Those students shouldn't be embarrassed that they missed it. It's, oh, okay, so we're talking about a store now. And you shift course, mm-hmm. You focus on that, and then every time that's played, like, okay, what else did we get? Now we know it's about a store, but what about the store? What do we care about? That second time through, see what people attach to that, and you just build it from there. So it kind of goes back to our previous discussions where students should take a risk. I think this is what they said. Great, put it down.
Yeah.
Like, we don't care. Just put something down, and then we'll work it out. We'll help you channel those into proficiency.
At least with that, you can get the thought process of the student, and the thought process may be wrong, but it may not be off by much. It's like, I definitely see where you're going with for this answer, why you picked it, but this is where we need to be. And can you see the difference? Can you notice the difference in that, in the tonality, or can you notice the difference in the pauses or whatever it may be, to focus them all, and that they'll understand a lot better. I think that way, the more mistakes they make, the better they're going to be. And that's a skill. It's not really a skill, but that's something I tell my students a lot of, is I'm trying to break them of, 9 years of not that this is wrong, but 9 years of you have to be 100% correct anytime you do anything or you're going to lose points. And it's not easy at this point, 9.5 years, 10 years of education where you've got to be right or you lose the points or you're teased or whatever, ridiculed, whatever it may be. I've got to break them of that. You've got to just, and I guess that is a skill, just be comfortable to
take a
risk.
This
is what I heard. Right, wrong, indifferent, doesn't matter. This is what I heard. And if I'm right, it'll be great. If I'm wrong, we'll work on it. And next time, hopefully, I'll hear something different.
Well, that's, yeah, it's just like sports, like growing up playing football. My coaches would explain tackling to us. They would demonstrate physically so we could see. But they're not demonstrating at full speed. They're grown men and they just had gotten off of work. They're, you know, grabbing, wrapping up this dummy and we're going through and we're not getting it 100% correct the first time we do it. Like that's kind of a completely unrealistic expectation. You know, you have to figure out how to do it. When I was 8 years old starting football, I had to walk through it, hug the dummy and keep driving my legs. Then they would, you know, eventually progress and we would run into it a little bit harder, wrap it up and take it to the ground. And then with time, then we're going full speed and we're really hitting that sucker and getting better and better. Then you get the new skill of tackling a moving human person who, in my case, was always bigger than me. So there's always progression, right? And then you start dealing with people that can do spin moves and jukes and things like that. So you're always progressing. You're always going to fail the first time you encounter something new. Well, not necessarily always, but there's a good chance you're going to fail the first time you do something new. So to have that expectation of, yeah, you get things 100% correct every time or you're just a miserable failure. Like that's
ridiculous. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of students at this point, they feel.
They do.
And they've been, again, whether it's right or wrong, they've learned that, I would say in some cases indirectly. Not because anything a teacher's done directly, but indirectly learned they've got to be right, or they won't be approved. Their parents won't approve them anymore. They won't have any approval, however fake this is in their brain.
Scholarships are gone.
Yeah.
Now you're doomed to this terrible college, university that isn't going to give you a realistic opportunity for a job.
Yeah. So skills are great. Those are things we need to work on and focus. However, something important, just as important when it comes to listening and really an interpretive, any of the interpretive modalities, so listening and reading, is finding appropriate resources, finding resources that will fit into our units, that will help students, or if we're making assessments, finding resources that will fit into those. It takes a lot of time, as all of you know, out there and you two here with me. And I'm sure Welker would agree with me if he were here. It takes a lot of time for us to find these resources, especially if we're looking for authentic resources, which we'll discuss what that means to be authentic. Sometimes it can take years even, I feel, to find the best resource for the situation that you need it. And you're going to need to build those resources over a number of years so that you'll have access to those whenever you need those. But when it comes down to it, whether or not it's the best resource, I would say that something, some kind of authentic listening is better than nothing. It's better to have some form of it, even if it's not the best or if it doesn't directly relate, some form of listening is going to be the best, rather than have none at all. And Roger's actually got quite a few resources. I'm going to pick on his brain a little bit. He's going to give us a few different resources. We'll try to all give some different resources that we end up using where we can find more authentic resources as opposed to non-authentic resources. And actually, before that, would you mind, Roger, giving us an idea of or an explanation of what an authentic resource really is?
So authentic resources, again, just like authentic sources, are things created for the target culture by the target culture. And the resource is just whatever it is that you're going to be working with. So Davin and I had the opportunity to go to NADSFL and ACTFL in November. And at NATSFL, National Association of
District Supervisors.
Supervisors of Foreign Language.
Yeah.
That's right. We were really fortunate to get to go to that. That was awesome. That was a really good, conference. And one of the things that we did during a kind of a roundtable session was we got to go learn about the LRCs, Language Resource Centers. And what those are,
is it a center for resources of language?
That would be correct. No, I can't remember. They told us, like, they gave us some background into what they are. So there are a wide variety of language resource centers across the country. And there's a website where you can link to any or all of them. And it is nflrc.org. So NFLRC as in National Foreign Language Resource Centers. And there are a ton. I have it pulled up on my laptop here. Just scroll down.
Is that
a
literal ton or a figurative ton?
A figurative ton.
Oh, okay.
One is CASLS that David Bong talked about last week. So CASLS is the Center for Applied Second Language Studies at the University of Oregon. They have a website on there. And each one of these language resource centers or LRCs kind of specialize in different things. I haven't taken the time to really dig into many of them. I just learned about most of them. I knew of a few of them, like CARLA, the Center for Advanced Research on Language Acquisition out of the University of Minnesota, which is where we kind of got started with the IPA. That's where we started gathering our information.
They have a lot of great insight into not only how to do IPAs, but also how to instruct your students and things like that.
Yeah, there is the National Foreign Language Resource Center from Hawaii. Yeah, University of Hawaii.
So how do they, on these sites generally, because I haven't had a chance to look at these, do they have them organized by language? Do they have them organized by reading sections, listening sections, or listening, audio components? How do they have these generally organized?
I
guess it depends site to site, or?
I think so, because a lot of them I haven't.
But they do have audio?
Gotten into. Yeah, a lot of them will. So I just opened up, the National Foreign Language Resource Center from the University of Hawaii, and I know that they do a lot with project-based language learning.
Right.
That's where Fermin and Ingrid went to do their,
training.
Yeah, their training. Thank you.
As for me, one of the ones that you introduced this to me my first year, maybe second year, is the Audiolingua.
Yeah, I actually was looking for that today, and I couldn't get it to come.
Audiolingua. .com, I believe.
Yeah, I couldn't get that to come up today.
Audiolingua. Hopefully, it's not down. I love that place.
I know.
But that's a fantastic webpage for audio only. I don't know how many different languages they have. They've got at least the main ones here in our district. Spanish, German, French. Yeah, it's organized. Now it's based on the European model for language, so that they call them A1, A2, B1, B2. From what I found, most level one students should be able to understand A1s and A2s. Some B1s, depending on the subject and the person talking, but they're all authentic people. Authentic speakers of the language. They're
native speakers.
Speakers of the language. They're probably authentic people. I don't know. I guess they could be fake, but they just talk about themselves, talk about holidays, anything really you can look for, pastimes.
Yeah, another
I'm
one.
I'm kind of mad if they don't. What we will do, though, is we'll try to list a few of these on our webpage. So check us out, lulpodcast.com. Look for episode 12, and we'll get some of those linked there, where you can jump to that, because there are a lot of resources out there. Are there any specific resources that you have used, Davin, or?
There are. I can't think of the websites. I always just bookmark them, so I don't have to worry about recalling what they are. University of Texas at Austin.
Oh yeah, they've got
some that
good
one
stuff
right here.
They've
yeah.
got some great ones, especially for Spanish. I don't know if they have French or German or Chinese. I know Spanish, they've got some good listening tasks there. And you can also bring up the script if you want to kind of do different types of activities with that. Mm-hmm. I found a couple other websites this last week, and I can't remember what they're called. We can post them on the site. I found one that, it is very grammar based in his instruction, but he does have audio clips and he does have, the scripts that go along with the audio. And so you can play the audio and you can play, he even has audio just for simple sentences. And then you'll have an audio for like a paragraph. And it's not an authentic resource because it's definitely made for language learners of the Spanish language, but he's a native speaker. The other girl that I've heard so far on the audios, she's a native speaker. And so although not authentic, it is native speakers and the language is native and correct. And so it will expose them to as close as we can get it as far as that's concerned. They're definitely better than having me record something in the target language and putting it out there.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. You're jumping ahead, a little foreshadowing man.
Sorry.
Well, technically, Roger's the little foreshadowing man. You're the tall foreshadowing man.
Hey.
Another one, and this is one that Bonnie Flint had mentioned to me over the summer at some point recently. It all mushes together in my brain. But on iTunes, I haven't checked to see if it's on Google Play or not, but it's called News in Slow. And they have them for different languages. I've got News in Slow French. There's an intermediate and advanced level. And they're, at least the intermediate one that I listen to, frequently, just so I can have my students listen to that as well, my higher level students. They're only like 6 minute, segments, 6 minute little episodes where it's just someone reading the news a little bit slower, because that's going to help. As a teacher, especially for the lower levels, the slower you speak, the better they will understand, like I'm doing right now. But they just read the news, just news headlines, post episodes up roughly every day, and they read just the news in that language. And they have it for Spanish, news in slow Spanish. I believe they have it German as well. They have news in slow English if you're trying to learn English or work on English. But I think that's been a great one where they're learning about actual events, but they're able to hear news and hear authentic, again, authentic people. I don't know if they're authentic. They could be fake for all I know. But, native speakers, to hear native speakers. And Davin, you touched on that. To have native speakers speaking the language, whether or not it's necessarily made for other native speakers, but to have native speakers use the language, when it comes to whether it's an assessment or a specific listening task, assignment, whatever you want to call it, that's probably one of the more important things, whether or not it's exactly what you need, but having a native speaker. I mean, as they hear us in class all the time, and when they get out there name a country, when they get out there in the Democratic Republic of Congo, when they're in,
Costa Rica,
when they're in Spain, when they're even in different parts of Mexico.
England.
Right? Canada, eh? The language isn't the same. They're not gonna have you as the teacher there with them to take everything that they hear and re-say it with your own accent, right? So I think the key when you're doing assignments, specifically listening assignments, listening assessments, is you have to get somebody that's native to speak that. They've got to hear different accents. They've got to hear and be able to understand a French Canadian person just as well as they would understand a French Swiss speaker, a Swiss French speaker. How do I word that? Or someone from the south of France, because the accents are different and they need to be able to understand that. As an English speaker, I could go to England and understand. I may struggle at some point, but I would understand them. I could go to Scotland and some far off little small village and still be able to understand most of the people, right?
And the point of that is it's just unrealistic to only use
yourself.
Ourselves. Yeah. There's no point to that. I mean, on the surface, okay, most students are taking a class for scholarship or school. And unfortunately, a lot of us as teachers, we're giving assignments to give a grade to pass them on the next year and et cetera. Mm-hmm. For some of us teachers, though, we really want the students to learn the language. As we've learned the language and we see the value that's there, unfortunately, here in the United States, most people don't share that same esteem for the same for mindset. Learning a foreign language, same mindset. But it's just more realistic to do native speakers. Roger and I speak Spanish, but we never talk to each other in Spanish because our most effective way to communicate is our first language. Mm-hmm. But what happens if we come across somebody or we go travel somewhere, whatever the scenario is, and we meet somebody that their best way to communicate is in Spanish? Well, then I have the opportunity to communicate with them effectively, regardless if they're from Spain or Costa Rica or Argentina. Now, arguably, some might be harder than others. I think I mentioned this with when I worked at Utah State over one summer. We had a lot of Dominican Republic students come over the summer, and we worked with them. Wow, that was hard. Like, I had no idea what a lot of those students were saying. It was tough. I maybe got 50% of DR Spanish. It was 15 or 50? 50, maybe. Okay. Yeah. It was tough. And now I could talk and they understood me, but talking about a listening curve, I mean, that was hard. Their Spanish is very different than anything.
Was it accent or speed or intonation or?
Yep. A lot of, they have, yeah, it's a whole ball of things. And they have a lot more idiomatic phrases and things like that than I had ever heard before. And, I mean, it's mixed in, you know, Haitian Creole. There's a lot of influences there. And that was tough. But I mean, by the end of the summer, I mean, my listening increased. I definitely never got anywhere near 100%. But that's realistic. So why not every once in a while have somebody from the DR if you can find an authentic text? Mm-hmm. Why not from Chile or wherever? And reality is it doesn't really matter as long as it's native. It's not, well, my students aren't going to understand somebody from Spain because of the Zeta. That's really hard. So I'm never going to have them listen to that. They're never going to encounter somebody from Spain speaking Spanish, you know. Whatever authentic text you have, or at least whatever native speaking audio clips you have, expose them to it. Just because that's realistic. Our whole reason for learning language is to communicate. And you're going to have to do it at some point.
One of the classes I took at Weber State was a phonetics or pronunciation type class where we got into, what is that? Phonetic symbols and being able to read the phonetic symbols. I probably couldn't do that very well now, but we were able to listen to accents from different French speaking countries. And like the Swiss French is really kind of, I don't know how to describe it other than bouncy. It's kind of up and down. Whereas normal French quote, whatever is normal is, you know, intonation is really, the same intonation on everything except towards the end. You've got to be able to understand all sorts of different accents. And by sheltering the accents that they get into, it's just not a real world. So what you said there, Davin, it just about the students they're never going to be around someone from Spain speaking Spanish. We've got what, four, five? How many do we have?
We have at least four at the secondary levels that are from Spain.
Yeah. Actually, in the district, we've got four or more Spanish teachers from Spain.
I encountered Spaniards in Mexico when I lived there. Multiple Spaniards.
Yeah.
So you can't.
Because they can use the language. And so they're free to go wherever they want and go live because they don't have the language barrier.
That's the beauty of learning another language is the world opens up. But so why would you limit them from Spanish? It's like, for example, let's say you were teaching English, and nope, we're not going to read any Mark Twain because he's from the South. You're not going to understand it. Swamp people. You guys seen Swamp People?
Oh, yeah.
I love that show. Shoot him! Shoot him, Clay! They have subtitles, right?
Yeah. And so, it was funny because I needed them. And then, like, I mean, that came out however many years ago. Mm-hmm. We moved to the house that we're in a little over 2 years ago. I've got a neighbor who's from the South. His Southern accent isn't that extreme.
Right.
But he says little things that I didn't grow up hearing.
Right.
But I understand it.
Well, and that's with the subtitles on the show. Yes, probably the first few times you watch it, you need them. But after a while, you start to understand and don't really have to look at them, right? That's the whole idea. Why limit and why basically say that you as a student are not smart enough? You are not going to understand this accent, period. I as a teacher, am going to say that you can't do that. That just seems way too limiting. So
It might be really hard at first. Yeah. I get struggling.
That's the purpose of practice, right?
Yeah.
And that's what class is for.
I get the struggle. I remember the first time I encountered somebody from Argentina when I was living in Mexico. It took me a second. I was used to Mexico Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I first encountered Argentinian, I mean, I met a Chilean. I met a few people from quite a few different countries. And a couple of the countries, it was fine. I understood them right away and it was great. But a few countries, it took me a little bit because, yeah, it's different. But that's normal. That's real life.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're going to encounter, where they're from, what their mm-hmm. language background is, but you need to know how to communicate and learn to communicate and work with them.
Yeah. From the teacher standpoint, we've got to realize that we can't in our minds limit what the students can do before actually seeing what they can do.
Yeah.
We're giving them chances to try different things with that. So it's
and chances. You can't do it once and say like, oh, they didn't get it. See, it's too hard. It's a process.
It's the language we're trying to teach them. So you've got to find authentic. The trap is with listening is I'm going to record myself, because they're used to me. That's just limiting them way too much. I think as teachers, we need to think more highly of our students. We should know that they're going to struggle, but they can do it. They can do pretty much anything we tell them they can do. If you tell them you can't do it, they're not going to be able to do it, or it's going to take them longer. So we've got to be much more positive than they can be at times. And you kind of mentioned it, and I'd like to tag on that, yes, we understand that students are taking these classes probably just for college or probably just to check a box off. Oh, I want to do it. In my head, every one of my students will at some point be fluent in French. That's how I teach. In my head, at some point, whatever fluent means, at some point, they'll be able to go to France and they'll be able to talk and converse and order food, or if they get lost, ask for directions and survive, right? That's how I approach every one of my classes, whether it's level one or AP. And I think that's a good mindset to have, is not, they're just checking a box. They're here to actually use the language. All right, so we're going to kind of finish up here. We've been talking a lot about the IPAs because, well, we just did our mid-year IPA and we're in the process of working on the end of year IPA. And Davin, you already kind of mentioned this, where listening is an interpretive modality. Right now on the IPA, we've just been using readings, but it's very likely in the near future, whether it's the end of year one or even beyond, that we will have a listening portion. Listening interpretive portion. What kind of does that, can you kind of explain what that would look like? Would it be any different from the reading, Davin, or is it about the same?
As far as format goes, it's really about the same. You can have the same type of questions. You can have main idea, keyword recognition to understand surface things of the text or audio in this case. And then you can have more in-depth type of questions. The reading between the lines, which with an audio, you can call it listening between the lines, I guess you could say. So as far as format goes and what's expected of the students, that's the same. We're just switching the mode from a reading to an actual listening.
Okay.
And that is coming because we can do, I mean, an IPA, and it's just interpreting, whether you want them to interpret mm-hmm. a reading or a listening or a picture. I mean, it's kind of an open thing. And yeah, it'll be coming soon because we also want to assess how are they doing just in a listening modality. Right now we have the interpersonal. And it's kind of a simulated interpersonal. It's not official yet due to some limitations with technology where we have them listen to a question and then mm-hmm. they respond. I mean, ideally we want them to negotiate meeting with somebody else. So there's a listening a little bit with the interpersonal mode, but ideally we would like to, I guess, assess that in isolation.
Right.
To a degree is how well did you interpret that listening based off of this criteria
right that we're now giving. With that conversation, it's kind of a, We're supposed to grade them more on the speaking portion, which maybe
right.
they don't answer a question directly.
But the listening factors into a degree
so
at what they're giving
it's
us.
It's kind of a hit or miss. Did they answer it? No, they didn't answer it, but they didn't say the same thing that they've already said. They tried to talk about what they think it's about. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but with the listening, reading, they can read it as many times as they need to. What about listening on an IPA? Would they be able to listen to it as often as they needed, or is it limited?
Ooh, I can't remember the exact suggestion. I want to say the suggestion was at least twice.
Okay. I think it was, at least two.
At least two times.
At least two.
And they'd probably read the questions first and then.
So you will still set the student up. You'll give them the scenario, you'll have them look at the questions, give them time to really focus on what am I listening for, right? Where we go back to what's important, what's not important. Here's my task. That's what I'm going to focus on. You play the audio. You'll give them some time to answer what they can, and you'll play it again. So I want to say it's at least twice, and I'd have to go it's been a while since I've read the listening part because we focus more on the reading and writing right now and other parts. Mm-hmm. But it will be on that portion since we're doing interpretive. They should have more than one opportunity, you know, especially at the novice to intermediate low kind of range where they're going to need multiple opportunities to succeed.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I think for us in the district, using the IPAs, and any of you out there that are interested in doing the IPA, there's a book that's printed by Actful.
That's a great book. It is totally worth it. It's like $25 or so for a hard $25. Copy. It is totally worth it.
There is a digital download. I don't know how much that is, but it's printed by Actful, Implementing Integrated Performance Assessment, written by, it looks like three different professors, Professor Adair Hauck, Professor Gleason, and Troyan, Professor Troyan. And I think Troyan was one you guys went to.
Two of those, yeah.
Anyway,
it's
a great book, and we've had questions since the IPA came out as far as teaching to the test. And the IPA, this book is full of the different questions they can be asked and the skills. It really addresses very well the skills they would need for listening. And there's two different types of teaching to the test. There's the unethical, where you literally take answers from the test or sections of reading from the test, and you say, that we need to work on this. Or you take the audio and you modify it in any way. You know, there's the unethical ways to teach toward the test. And ethical ways is, okay, this is what the test's about. What skills are in here? These are the skills I'm going to work on in my class, right? So I think for listening, for all the modalities eventually, and this implementing integrated performance assessment printed out by Actful, it's an awesome book if you get a chance to order it. Bonnie did order some for those that requested it in our district, but it really helps you understand the assessment, but then also the skills behind it. The types of questions that we can ask on listening or reading, will help you understand, and then you can help your students understand really what they're trying to do when they read or listen to a text. And then kind of the end, this is something relatively new, and going forward, we may actually have an episode specifically on this, but Actful has recently updated their can-do statements for the different modalities, and you can search those on Actful.org, right?
Mm-hmm.
I forget the webpage. You can search those on Actful.org, just can-do statements. They've got a new, and I think these are incredible for an incredible resource for all of the teachers out there. They've got it broken down by novice and intermediate, and then within those, the three novice, low, mid, high, intermediate, low, mid, high. They've got it broken down by interpretive communication and presentational, and they're like 16 pages of these, and they're organized really well. All these can do's. For example, I'm looking right now at the novice interpretive can do, and as far as a performance indicator, now it references informational texts, and it refers to texts, are either spoken, written, or signed. But for example, a novice mid, from an informational text, they can identify some basic facts from memorized words and phrases, as long as they're supported by gestures or visuals in informational texts. And again, text can be spoken or written or signed. So that's a pretty basic can-do of what they should be looking for. So as a teacher, okay, they can identify basic facts from memorized words. So words that they should have known, words that they should be practicing a lot, they should be able to identify those. If it's not one of those, they're going to struggle identifying it. So if they don't get that one right, then it doesn't mean they failed, right? They may still be able to get an A, that sort of a thing. But these, I think they're very well organized. If you have the chance to look at them, aside from ordering that book, if you get a chance for that too, check out Actful's webpage and look for those can-do. They call them proficiency benchmarks and performance indicators. They're, like I said, they're very well organized. Even color-coded by the novice intermediate level. Get it, take a look at those, and they'll really help, I feel. I know we've got our can-dos for our units, but these are done just as well, and they can kind of help you understand what they should be able to do at these different levels. And they'll help with grading and instruction design and everything. So if you get a chance, check that out. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Davin, and and Roger for being here. If you have any questions, if you have any concerns, if you have other resources that you use and you wouldn't mind sharing with us, check us out on Twitter at LULpodcast.com as well, and send us those resources if you don't mind sharing. Hopefully we're not an elitist cadre, but we're a group of teachers that are willing to share what we do because we're passionate about learning.
I just wanted to put out there that across the board, at least in our district, listening is by far the lowest modality. So it's something we all have in common. Everyone's students struggle with listening, and so if you're not doing a whole lot of listening type activities for your students and wondering where to start, my answer would be anywhere. I think we all kind of took it upon ourselves last year, kind of stumbling our way through a little bit and just kind of throwing more listening at our students. And now as we've learned more about the IPA, now it feels like we're getting more traction and we're getting a much clearer direction of where we need to go. And I would just recommend the same for anyone out there who's looking at their data. Anyone who's out there who's looking at their data and values looking at your data and seeing if you're seeing that your students are struggling with listening and you want to do something about it, please do. And however you start, that's a great start. And then just learn more about how you can improve. So that would be my invitation, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's great. And there was probably in several podcasts, I think, it might have been Davin that said it, maybe Brandon. Don't be afraid to never do something again. So if you think this is what I need to do, give it a try with the listening. And if it doesn't work, don't do it again. Or if parts of it don't work, see what you can modify and change and always. And the other saying that we haven't used a lot of recently is fail better next time. Just if it doesn't work, see what you can change and try it again. And eventually it'll be to a point that you'll feel more comfortable with it. And the students will be hopefully closer to where they need to be. Well, with those challenges in mind, understand that we're all trying to get better. We're not. I still need to improve. I hope the two that are with me, Davin and Roger, feel the same way, that we're not perfect. We don't profess to be perfect. My listening scores still aren't that great. I still need to do more. But at least I know what I need to do. I just need to actually be able to find these resources and work on it. And just try. Don't be afraid of your data. Don't be afraid of not doing something right. And just keep trying and keep pushing forward. And with that, I will say a plus.
Adios.
Hasta luego.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.